Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Welcome Everybody to the Lifeboat Hour, August 31, 2014, our last show of the month of August. So here we are at essentially the end of summer, although the first day of autumn is September 21st. Nevertheless, the weather is beginning to change in some areas of the Northern Hemisphere, and most students are back in school. With Labor Day happening tomorrow in the United States, our thoughts turn to fall and winter, and of course, we wonder what fall and winter will actually look like this year. The United Nations gave us another climate report this week that is even more horrifying than the last one. But it appears that no one cares anymore, and all that seems to result from these reports is a big yawn. But you won't be yawning when you read Extinction Dialogues, Living with Death in Mind, the book that Guy McPherson and I are publishing later this month, or perhaps in early October. I invite you to pre-order the book now in any format that you like. You can pre-order at your local bookstore or at all of the usual places online, or go to my website, carolynbaker.net, or Guy's website at Nature Bats Last. This is the Lifeboat Hour, and I'm your host, Carolyn Baker. On the first Sunday night of this month, my guest on this show was Tyler Hess, a young millennial who's working on an organic farm in Vermont, as opposed to using his college degree in the ways that this culture says one should use a degree. And tonight we're ending this month with another young man who's using his skills to make a difference for homeless youth in New York City. I'm talking about Adam Bucco, co-author of Occupy Spirituality, A Radical Vision for a New Generation. Not unlike the August 3rd show I did with Tyler, as you recall, Occupy Spirituality is a dialogue between two different generations because Adam's co-author is Matthew Fox, who's in his 70s and is a radical former Dominican priest who was dismissed from the priesthood for his feminism and his activist views in the late 1980s. Adam has an amazing background that I want to share with you before he speaks. He grew up in Poland during the totalitarian regime and spent his early years exploring the anarchist youth movement as a force for social and political change. At the age of 17, Adam immigrated to America, where his desire to find his path toward a meaningful life led him to monasteries in the U.S. and in India. His life-defining experience took place in India, where on his way to a Himalayan hermitage, he met a homeless child who lived on the streets of Delhi. This brief encounter led Adam to the Ashram of the Poor, where he began his work with homeless youth. After returning to the U.S., he worked on the streets of various American cities with young people struggling against homelessness and prostitution. He eventually co-founded the Reciprocity Foundation, an award-winning nonprofit dedicated to transforming the lives of New York City's homeless youth. In addition to his work with homeless youth, Adam established HAB, H-A-B, an ecumenical, interspiritual, new monastic fellowship for young people, which offers formation in radical spirituality and sacred activism. He collaborates with spiritual leaders across religious traditions and mentors young people, helping them discover a spiritual life in the 21st century and how to live deeply from the heart in service of compassion and justice. Adam is also a recipient of several awards, and his work has been featured by ABC News, CBS, NBC, New York Daily News, The National Catholic Reporter, Ode Magazine, Yoga International Magazine, and Sojourner Magazine. Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Adam.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
And so some of our people in our audience, Adam, have a spiritual path or are exploring spirituality, and others have little interest in spirituality. But I'm sure that everyone listening is curious about your work with homeless youth. You and I both understand that one cannot separate spirituality from service in the world because they're inextricably connected. So how are you serving homeless youth in tangible ways that may or may not have anything to do with spirituality?
Well, so for me, my work with homeless youth is an extension of my prayer life. And my prayer life is really about being able to be in a state of receptivity and listening, being able to recognize that impulse of God that we all have within our hearts, and essentially saying yes to that impulse and living as an expression of that impulse in the world, which oftentimes manifests as being in service of compassion and justice, using our talents in service of compassion and justice. So listening to that impulse of God in my heart led me to this ministry of working with homeless youth. In terms of, you know, what do we do with them? Well, first of all, we work with young people in New York City, in all the boroughs of New York City, young people who have been brutalized by life, who have been broken by all kinds of systems, have been rejected by their families, people who oftentimes end up on the streets of New York. And so our work is to find them and then to help them to heal from all of their trauma, to heal from all of the bad experiences that happened to them in their lives, and then help them to find their talents, and then help them to create a life in which they can translate their talents into something that makes a difference in the world, into something that enables them to make a living, into something that helps them to build a healthy and sustainable life. And, you know, it manifests in many different ways. You know, a lot of our work uses these kinds of contemplative and holistic methods. So we use a lot of things like meditation, spiritual direction, acupuncture, massage therapy, and all of that is there to essentially help them to heal from all the bad stuff that happened to them, to deal with their trauma. And then after that, we help them to find a vocation, find the calling, that sense that all of us have within ourselves, you know. And then we connect them to leaders from the industry of their choice. Together they collaborate on projects. So kids have a chance to build a professional portfolio. Then we place them in internships, help them to go to college, and essentially step by step help them to rebuild their lives.
That is amazing work. And, you know, I'm very passionate about service to the homeless, and I've recently been impacted by a particular connection with one homeless person, which mm-hmm. I started writing a book about. In fact, he and I are sort of writing it together.
That's beautiful.
And as a society, you know, we've totally marginalized the homeless and pushed them to the fringes of civilization. And while we do have a number of charitable organizations that are serving the homeless, and, of course, very limited public funds, what are some things that people listening to this program can do to help them?
Well, first of all, if someone feels called to work with homeless people, I would say that, you know, the first thing that they need to do is to connect with an organization that is already working with either homeless adults or homeless youth or homeless children, and then they kind of have to commit, you know, to just showing up, maybe on a weekly basis, but definitely showing up on regular basis, maybe once a week, maybe twice a week. And the first step in that journey should be about listening and learning about what is needed, you know. Oftentimes people show up and they have a lot of preconceived notions about, you know, what is it that a specific organization needs, you know, what is it that a specific person needs. But the truth is, the best thing to do is just to commit to showing up on a regular basis and to be open to learning and to be open to listening to how one's skills could be connected to what is the call. Because I tend to look at every homeless person as a call that I need to respond to, you know?
Yeah.
And there are many organizations, I mean, every major and major city in the U.S., every county has organizations that essentially address some of those issues related to homelessness. Of course, most of those organizations are underfunded because as a society, we don't really like to pay a lot of attention to our homeless people. I mean, yes, if they're very visible on our streets, then there's some kind of a political pressure to remove them. And then we often just kind of sweep those problems under the carpet, you know, to remove them from downtown to like the outskirts of our cities, but they're still there. And so another thing that people could do is, if you do have skills, if you do have resources, if you do know how to raise money, that's one of the most needed things, you know, to be able to organize people so some resources could be produced, and so then those resources could be connected to things that can make a real difference in people's lives.
You know, I think we didn't talk about this, but I think there's such a fear among most Americans, and I would say white middle-class Americans, of homeless people. And many Americans that I talk to have never even talked to a homeless person. You know, we are afraid of them. We assume that they're all addicts and alcoholics and criminals. And as Gary Noel was talking earlier on his show, you know, we're just increasingly criminalizing the poor and particularly the homeless to the point where everything they do, everywhere they go, is a crime. So it's really brutal for these folks right now, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that seems to be our standard response, you know, as a society. Whenever people essentially hit the bottom, whenever they experience difficulties, we always show up, you know, with our police, with our guns, and recently with our tanks. And we try to address those issues that way, you know. I mean, it's really unbelievable. And just one thing that you mentioned about addictions, you know, like most people assume that homeless people don't have jobs, right, and that homeless people are addicted. The truth is most of the kids that we work with at the Reciprocity Foundation in New York City, most of those kids have never experienced an addiction. You know, they're not on drugs. Mm-hmm. They've just been broken because right. Their families, you know, kicked them out of their homes simply because maybe, you know, some of those kids identify as LGBT, you know, or perhaps they grew up in a foster care system that is very dysfunctional, and then on their 18th birthday, they were simply told to leave, and they ended up on the street. I mean, most of those people are really wonderful people with amazing talents who just need a little bit of help, you know? And I mean, I would also recommend for everyone, if you are interested in this issue of youth homelessness, you know, at our organization, at the Reciprocity Foundation, a couple of years ago, seven of our young people teamed up with a local TV station that is part of CW Network, WPIX, and together they created a film where each of the kids, you know, co-directed and co-wrote the film. It aired on the station, and later on, all of those kids were nominated for an Emmy Award for making that film. And the film is really an honest portrayal of what it means to be homeless. The title of the film is Invisible Diaries of New York's Homeless Youth, and you could just search for it online. You can also see it on the reciprocityfoundation.org. And I think that, you know, our goal while making that film was really to deconstruct some of the stereotypes that we're all so scared of, you know?
Right.
And most of those stereotypes are not even real.
So say that name of the title again, please, of the film.
So the title is Invisible, and then the subtitle is Diaries of New York's Homeless Youth.
And this is an opportunity to mention your website. Tell us the address again.
So it's reciprocityfoundation.org.
Very good. Now, I'm holding in my hand your wonderful book, Occupy Spirituality, A Radical Vision for a New Generation. And in the book, you talk about a new emerging spirituality that you see unfolding among young people at this time. What is that new emerging spirituality? And will you also explain the HAB, H-A-B Fellowship?
Yes, so this new emerging spirituality, you know, many young people that I meet, and that includes both some of the homeless youth that I work with, but also kids on college campuses, kids in both in the U.S. and Europe, where I also work sometimes, a lot of those young people have a deep longing for meaning, for a life of purpose, but they're not really interested in religion. They're not really going to be joining a church or a mosque. They're not going to be going to Buddhist or Hindu monasteries, but yet there's that deep longing in their hearts where they want to essentially build a deep contemplative life, a life that enables them to discover their talent and then use those talents in service of building a world that reflects, you know, things like justice, compassion, and beauty. And so when I say new spirituality, this is what I mean by that. There's a whole generation of people that is deeply spiritual, that is deeply connected to this desire to build a world that works for all. And they want to learn things like contemplation. They want to learn things like meditation. They are interested in all of those wonderful spiritual technologies that all of our traditions developed over the last, you know, thousands of years.
Yes, yes.
But they're not interested in religion, and so when I speak to some of the religious elders, most of them simply assume that the young generation is all about, you know, materialism. They're not really interested in anything, and it's generally speaking a very individualistic and a hopeless cause. That's not true, you know. There is a deep spiritual longing, and so this new spirituality is about that. You know, how do we create structures and technologies that will enable those young people to connect with some of their deepest aspirations, to deepen their spiritual lives, to find their gifts, and then together through prayer and meditation and sacred friendship to essentially build courage to use those gifts in service of compassion and justice, you know, maybe to say no to some of the jobs that they're being offered once they graduate from colleges, and instead, you know, move like that person that you interviewed on your show to the farm and start, you know, healing the planet, so to speak. So that's essentially what I mean by that. And there are specific when you look at some of those longings that young people have, you know, you soon realize that what they mean by spirituality has some very specific qualities. So number one, they're not really interested in a spirituality that doesn't include service. You know, when you look at the generation that let's say came of age during the 60s, usually those guys had two different choices that they made. Number one choice, a lot of those guys who were serious about their spirituality joined monasteries and became monks and swamis and all of that stuff. They essentially checked out, left the world, and instead committed to their spiritual path. Another example of that was something completely different, when some people basically, you know, joined the corporations, went to work on Wall Street, forgot about their alternative values, but didn't forget about their spirituality. They did their spirituality on weekends during their summer vacations, you know, where they would go on a yoga retreat or on a silent meditation retreat. And so this new generation is not interested in either of those options.
Right.
They're not interested in checking out and essentially abandoning the planet, abandoning the poor. They're not interested in that. They're
right.
Interested in developing a spiritual practice that can help them to cultivate energy to essentially heal all of those problems, you know. They're also not interested in vocations that don't necessarily reflect their deepest spiritual aspirations. Again, they want a spirituality that enables them to claim their gifts, develop their talents, and then work for building a world that works for all. Another characteristic of this new spirituality, you know, traditional religions oftentimes just basically said to their practitioners, especially Eastern religions, just meditate and don't worry about anything else. Meditation will produce enlightenment and etc. And when we look at some of the spiritual leaders of the last 20, 30 years, we see that actually there have been a lot of problems. You know, meditation was not able to change some of the patriarchal structures of our religious systems, you know.
Right.
Meditation was not able to produce people who were psychologically healthy. I mean, thus, you know, all the dark stuff that has been happening with our spiritual and religious leaders, usually stuff related to both sex and abuse and money.
Right.
And so young people, when they talk about spirituality, they know that it's not enough to meditate. Another thing that needs to be included is healthy psychology, what Angie Harvey calls shadow work, you know?
Right, right.
And so that's yet another thing. And then the final thing that I think is very crucial is that, you know, there's a sense that life should be celebrated, and so their practices oftentimes, you know, yes, they pay attention to their heartbreak, they pay attention to all of the stuff that is going wrong, but there are also a lot of practices that are connected to cultivating joy and the spirit of celebration, this real spirit of aliveness, you know. So a lot of the practices are about that, about cultivating their authentic aliveness and then using what's cultivated again in service of compassion and justice.
And I just want to remind people, I'm speaking with Adam Bucko, who works with homeless youth in New York City and is also the author of Occupy Spirituality, A Radical Vision for a New Generation. Now, the one question you didn't answer is, what is the Hob Fellowship?
Yes, so Hob Fellowship is essentially a structure that is here to serve those young people who have a deep longing for spirituality and sacred activism. And so HAB is really about training those people in what it means to have a contemplative life, what it means to be an activist that is able to connect their prayer life or his or her prayer life to action in the world. What does it mean to serve in a prayerful way? So it's a network of people, it's a community of people, and we offer trainings, we offer meditation groups, we offer retreats, and it's essentially a spiritual formation process where we mentor people and help them to develop their own unique sense of spirituality, where they can learn practices, where they can find elders and mentors, and essentially dedicate their life to both spiritual search and radical activism in the world.
That's so beautiful. And you also talk about a new monasticism, and I'm very sure that this isn't the kind of monasticism where people live in monasteries in isolation from the world. So what is the new monasticism?
Well, you know, when you look at the old monasticism, especially in the Christian tradition, the original monastic impulse was really about protest. You know, in the 4th century when mm-hmm. Christianity essentially hooked up with the empire, a lot of the people who were serious about Christ, about Jesus, decided to move to the desert as a form of protest.
Right.
They didn't want to join the empire. They didn't want... You know, that they were not okay with all of a sudden rulers using the name of Jesus to motivate people to kill others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved into the desert and slowly they started building communities of people who wanted to maintain this kind of an alternative way of life, where their lives were all about personal transformation and service. Of course, one could say that, you know, didn't really last for very long and that some of the monasteries lost their way. I think that's true. But there were also some monasteries that preserved that original impulse to essentially build a world within a world, so to speak, a world that works according to slightly different values. And so to us, we look at some of those original monastic impulses and communities and we say, what can we learn from them? And we built, again, a new structure for all of those young people interested in spirituality, a structure that can enable them to essentially commit their lives to both personal transformation and social change. And for some people, that happens in relationship with a specific religious tradition. For others, it happens completely outside of the religious system, you know? And when we talk about new monasticism, you're absolutely right, you know? We take the essence of what monasticism is about, but we also understand that times have changed. And in order to have that kind of a commitment nowadays, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to be celibate. It doesn't mean that you have to withdraw from the world. The world needs all of our gifts. And so being able to be in a committed relationship, being able to learn how to love another person, being able to learn how to serve in a prayerful way, we think that's a new way of being a monastic.
Thank you so much for that, and just so in harmony with what we're talking about, you have requested a song tonight, Higher Heights by Mishka, and I'm wondering if you'd tell us a bit about Mishka and about the song.
Yes, so this particular song and this artist, you know, I really like this artist. It's a guy who grew up in Bermuda. He plays reggae. This kind of a lot of his songs are kind of a combination of some acoustic stuff with reggae, and a lot of his songs really reflect some of the themes that I think your radio show is about, and that my work is about. And so this is one of those songs that I like to listen to, you know, on my way to our center sometimes, because I feel like by listening to his music, I get infused with this energy to commit to what my life mission is, you know, in a more complete way. And so I hope that this song has a similar effect on you and all of the listeners.
Well, let's listen to Mishka singing Higher Heights.
People, the power is in your hands to chase out corruption, to heal this beautiful land, your beautiful land. Oh yeah, yeah. People, the hour. Can come together now, rise up and take a stand. We've got the powers, yes, to stop those warmongers. Though they try to divide us all, Jah love us to conquer. Babylon system won't be able to stand any longer. Ay, 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 yo, ay, 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 yeah, ay, yo, ay, 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 yo, ay, 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 yeah, ay, yo, ay, ay, yo. Acquisition of material things won't satisfy. Everlasting, it never leaves us in the cold. But it's a shame to see Mother Earth and the children being bought and sold. Some of them say things have changed, they still remain the same as in the days of those pirates of old. Ay, 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 yo, ay, 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 yo, ay, ay, yo. Thank you. need and how pleasant it is when we dwell in unity and love. It's as precious as the rains, it's as the dew from the mountains above. That would fly to the hills and be at rest if I had the wings of a dove. But since I have no wings, I hear the voice of my supplication.
That was Mishka with Higher Heights, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and we're talking with Adam Bucko, author of Occupy Spirituality, A Radical Vision for a New Generation. Adam is an author, a speaker, a spiritual activist, and works closely with many of New York City's homeless youth. Adam, I want to make sure that people know how to contact you, so give us the name of your website again, please.
So there are two websites. One is reciprocityfoundation.org. That's for our work with homeless youth. And then there's my personal website for my speaking and other things, which is adambacco.com.
Okay, and so one of the things that I totally and completely resonate with you on is the phrase you use, vocation as a spiritual practice. I know what that means for me. What does that mean for you?
So for me, to be in my vocation, that requires me to be in a contemplative state. And for me, to be in a contemplative state is to be in a state of prayer. And the way that I understand prayer is to essentially, as I mentioned before, to be in this state of receptivity and listening, in this state of willingness to consent to God's love and action in myself, to say yes to it, you know? And that's how I experience vocation. I get into that state, and then I begin to sense that there's this energy, this impulse that is arising in me that wants to live through me. And through prayer and with the encouragement of some of my mentors, I try to always say yes to what that impulse wants. And I do my best to live as an expression of that impulse in the world. And in my case, it manifests itself as me being available to young people, both homeless people as well as other people. And, you know, speaking about this vocation as a spiritual practice, I've never met a person who doesn't have a calling, who doesn't have a vocation. And oftentimes, it's just a matter of learning some basic tools to be able to get into that state of listening, that state of receptivity, so they can begin to sense how God wants to live through them in their lives, you know?
Yeah, and so I'm very curious, and I'm sure our listeners are as well, how you came to write Occupy Spirituality. And also, you could have had a similar dialogue with a lot of elders, but for this book, you chose to have it with Matthew Fox. So how did all of that come about?
Well, so actually, you know, Matthew Fox and I, we've been friends for, I think, over a decade, and Matthew is someone whom I consider to be my mentor. And the way that it came about, you know, we've always had these amazing conversations about what was happening in the world, what was happening to the new generation. Matthew is one of those elders who's really concerned about young people and who want to essentially make whatever resources he has available, whatever wisdom he has, he wants to make it available to young people. So he's always just doing all that he can to connect with the younger generation. And so we had some of those conversations, and then one day he actually, you know, invited me to collaborate on this book. We didn't know what the book would be. I remember, you know, I was in a silent retreat in California. And then after that, I met with Matthew, and we had this one day when we talked nonstop from 9 a.m. to, I think, 10 p.m., which is kind of insane, you know. And after that day, we decided, you know, this book should be a dialogue. And so that's how the book came about. And we started writing the book a couple of months before Occupy Wall Street began. And we were essentially naming all of those impulses that were happening in some of the young people that we work with. And then when Occupy Wall Street happened, we realized that all of those impulses that we were naming were present in those small Occupy communities that were emerging all around the country and all around the world. And so we decided to essentially connect Occupy with this kind of a new spiritual awakening. And of course, I mean, if you talk to any of the people who participated in the Occupy Wall Street, for a lot of them, it was really a deep spiritual experience to experience that kind of a, I guess I could call it, eruption of energy and grace. You know, that gathered all of those people together, and it's like all of a sudden all of them got this download and were moved to act in a very specific way, you know. And so that's how the book came together. It took us about a year to write it, you know. We met in a few different places, went to different Occupy sites, met with many young leaders and dialogued with them, and then put together essentially the highlights of what we experienced in that year. And that's really, you know, that's really what this book is. And we also early on made a decision to make this book very personal, you know, because as Matthew says, oftentimes in a time when, you know, institutions are losing their credibility, we have to go back to our personal stories, because those personal stories are much more reliable and credible. So we decided to bring a lot of our lives into this process of writing. So a lot of the things that we address in this book, you know, come from our life experiences. So the book is a very personal book, you know, and we really wanted to mirror what some of those intergenerational conversations that we deeply believe in, what they could look like, how, you know, like, could this be a model for people to gather together in small circles where both elders and youth learn how to essentially take off their masks and be present to each other in such a way that wisdom can come through everyone participating, where both sides could be changed by what wants to emerge in those conversations, you know. And so we hope that this book can essentially encourage people to do that.
Well, I have a lot more questions to ask you, Adam, but we need to take a station break, and we'll be right back with the Lifeboat Hour. This is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Carolyn Baker, your host, and my guest tonight is Adam Bucko, and we've been talking about your book, Adam, Occupy Spirituality, which is essentially a dialogue between you and one of my favorite elders in this culture, the radical former Dominican priest Matthew Fox. So tell us a little bit about intergenerational collaborations, please.
Yes, so, you know, I know when I look at my life, mentors and elders played a very special role in my life. They essentially gave me a permission, so to speak, to really start paying attention to what wants to emerge in my heart, what wants to emerge in my life. And then they helped me to name some of those things. And also by encouraging me, they gave me courage to essentially dedicate my life to pursuing those things. And so I think that intergenerational collaborations are essentially about that, where elders show up in this kind of a special and encouraging way, and can help young people to recognize what's authentic in their lives. You know, what is it that wants to emerge in their hearts? And then encourage them by examples from their own lives. You know, like someone like Matthew Fox or someone like Angie Harvey. You know, I mean, they've been through a lot of things. They've dealt with a lot of stuff. You know, they developed amazing wisdom. And so to make it available to the younger generation is really tremendous. But I think that intergeneration collaborations, you know, don't only benefit young people. I think that they are also necessary for the mentors and for the elders as well, you know, because they essentially reassure them, I think, that what they committed to, what they worked for all of their lives, that it was a good choice, that there are going to be people who will continue you know, their struggles, who will continue to work for some of those same goals of compassion and justice, you know. So I think that as a society, I mean, there is no way of solving our problems unless we begin to collaborate in that kind of a way. And Matthew Fox, you know, oftentimes reminds me that in the Rule of St. Benedict, which is one of those monastic rules and prototypes for how to build communities. You know, Saint Benedict apparently said that when a gathering happens in the monastery, the young should speak first because the Holy Spirit, you know, tends to speak through the youth first. And I think that that's really interesting, you know, because in my work, I know that young people come up with amazing ideas, you know, and sometimes we have a tendency to just say, well, but that's very naive, you know, that's not practical. Well, is it possible to acknowledge their ideas and then connect to some of the wisdom that the elders developed over the years? I think that that's really the only way to go, you know?
Well, I absolutely do know, and I want to respond to what you're saying, but I also want to invite people to consider calling in with a question or a comment from Adam. The number to call is 888-874-4888, and we will try to take your call. And, you know, we're talking about intergenerational collaborations. And for me, Adam, as an elder, it's really important to have the perspective of the next generation, because we only have ours as elders. And so, you know, in my generation, we need to widen that perspective so that it's much, much more inclusive, because your generation and Tyler's generation and others who are in, you know, younger than us really have a much broader perspective. And I want to talk about one of the heroes that you mentioned, which is Andrew Harvey. He was a guest on this show on August 10th. And I'd like you to tell us how Andrew has influenced you, and then I'd like you to tell us who some of the heroes are that we can learn from. And, of course, you don't have to mention specific names unless you want to, but tell us what kind of people we need to pay attention to and learn from.
Yeah, so Andrew Harvey has been a mentor of mine as well for the past decade or so. I actually met him through Matthew Fox. And Andrew has been a tremendous gift in my life. You know, he's been always available to me, always willing to really help me to recognize what's real, you know, what is the direction that needs to emerge in my life, and then really supporting me. When I met Andrew initially, it was at the beginning of my work with homeless youth, and, you know, at that point, I mean, I myself was one step from being homeless, as you know. To get projects funded in this country is almost impossible. And Andrew was someone who continuously showed up, made his resources available, and just his commitment was so inspiring. And I continue to you know, to have this amazing friendship with him. And I don't know, to me, he's like a gift from God, you know. And that's just on the personal level. When you look at his writings and some of the teachings that he developed over the years and that he shared with people, it's just so rich and so beautiful. I mean, he's one of those most important voices that I think we all need to pay attention to. And what I love about his theology and his mysticism is that he continuously reminds people that contemplation and activism cannot and should not be separated.
Yes.
And again, a lot of the spiritual elders, you know, kind of forget about that sometimes.
Right.
You know, so I'm deeply, deeply, deeply grateful for his presence in my life. You know, what I'm saying right now, it actually feels like I'm naturally capturing, you know, the gratitude that I feel for him, because his contribution to my life has just been so, so huge, you know. And in terms of some of those other people that I pay attention to, you know, there's one woman theologian and mystic, Beverly Lanzada, who I think, I mean, her theology is just so beautiful, and I think also very needed, and she represents this kind of a feminine perspective. You know, our friend Mirabai Starr, who's a translator of the mystics, who's really wonderful. You know, elders, of course, like Matthew Fox, but we talked about him. But he's, I mean, arguably, you know, one of the most important theologians of the 20th century and 21st century. People like Father Thomas Keating, you know, when it comes to the contemplative prayer movement. And then some of the historical figures that I tend to be really continuously inspired by, you know, people like Malcolm X, people like Gandhi, people like Dorothy Day, Catherine Doherty, all of those people that I turn to for wisdom, especially at a time when things get difficult, you know, to commit your life to this work for social justice, it's not an easy thing, because we have to remake that commitment every day. And as you know, I mean, it's not easy to get funding for some of these projects. Sometimes it's not easy to even, make a living for a lot of people. So it's really important to essentially have those ancestors and those mentors and those friends who can continuously, over and over again, remind us why we are making that commitment, so we don't lose our way, so we don't start doubting ourselves, and so we can continue essentially live as an expression of God's love and justice in the world, you know?
And I want to invite our callers to consider calling in with a question or comment from Adam, 888-874-4888. And again, the best way to contact Adam is through his website. One of them is reciprocity.org. And the other one, Adam?
It's actually Reciprocity Foundation.
ReciprocityFoundation.org. And the other one?
And the other one is adambucko.com.
Okay, adambucko.com, that's B-U-C-K-O. Larry in Pittsburgh has a comment. Larry, go ahead.
Hello, Carolyn. Good evening. Good evening, Adam. It's just such a pleasure listening to your show, Carolyn. You were just such a conduit for just such incredible energy that's in the universe right now, and you seem to find that and bring it to the rest of us, and I just am so thankful for you and what you're doing and the service that you're doing.
Well, thank you for appreciating the Lifeboat Hour, and what's your question or comment for Adam?
Well, it's more just a comment that Adam, you are just one of the most lucid people I've heard, I don't know, maybe ever. You were just, what you say is just so clear, so concise, so to the point, so simplified. It's like the loftiness that you speak of is just so incredibly grounded. And, you know, I'm just want to thank you also for what you're doing. And
Thank you so much.
Yeah, because I mean, it's just emanating clear out here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania this evening. And it's made me pick up this application. I had to do some volunteering for some hospice work with my dogs. And I said, you know what? You can't let this thing sit here another day. You've got to sit here, and you've got to fill it out, and you've got to get going. You've got to get up off your butt and go do something.
Good for you, Larry. Good for you.
Beautiful.
So, thank you both very much. God bless you.
Thanks for calling in, Larry.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
You know, one of the things Larry mentioned that I really appreciate about you, Adam, and one of the things I try to bring onto the show because it's so important in my life, is that when people talk about spirituality, it is really grounded. It's in the body. It's in the flesh, you know. It's not just all up in the head and airy-fairy stuff. And you were giving
And I appreciate that about you, I think. A few years ago, I actually attended one of, we didn't know each other, but I attended one of your lectures that you did with Angie Harvey in Oak Park, Illinois, and that's what I remember, that what you presented was extremely grounded, very much in the body, and very much about, you know, using our spiritual insights to address our daily worldly problems, which I think, I mean, that's the goal of spirituality, to me at least.
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things, Adam, that I'm very fond of repeating wherever I go is that elderhood is very different from age. We all know people in their 70s, 80s, 90s who really don't have a clue about life. Now, they may have been very good people, and they might have seemed to learn a little along the way, but they can't really lead us. And on the other hand, I certainly know many young people in their 20s and 30s who are wise beyond their years and who can and are leading us in the direction of an entirely new paradigm. I definitely consider you one of those people, and so I'm going to call you an elder, if you don't mind.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's a privilege to be called that, and I completely agree with you, and I know Matthew Fox makes this statement in our book where he says that elderhood is not about playing the stock market or moving to Florida and playing golf. You know, it's about being able to deal with your fear. It's about working through your fears and getting to some kind of a point of wisdom where you can actually offer guidance to others, you know?
Absolutely. And what wisdom would you like to share right now with young people, especially those who may be uncertain about what to do with their lives that will make a difference and give them a sense of purpose?
Yes, so for me, you know, one of the things that I would like to share, I think that I would like to invite people to commit to a daily spiritual practice where they learn the method of meditation and prayer. And the method of prayer that I usually teach is a very simple one. Just, you know, dedicate some time twice a day and talk to God, envisioning that God is there present with you as your best friend. So open every part of your life, every part of your heart to God, and just talk to God. And then when you're done with words, just sit there in silence, opening to this presence that you will begin to feel. And if you do that twice a day, on a daily basis, something will begin to open up, and then eventually you will begin to sense that maybe something wants to emerge in your life. Again, include that something in your conversations with God, and then when you begin to sense that there is a call that is arising in your heart, a call to service, commit to it. And people can always also in this process reach out to me, and I can help them to find a mentor or to connect with an elder, because I think that all of those things, spiritual practice and having a mentor, is extremely important, you know?
I want to just emphasize, some people are uncomfortable with the word God. And so in my work, one of the things that I do is I use other words like presence or something greater. Because, you know, we have so much abuse of the word God in our culture, and it causes so many people
problems, because a lot of people have been wounded by religion and wounded by the use of the word God and wounded by spirituality in some cases. So
yeah, absolutely.
I just want to say, let's just open it up to however we want to define something greater, so that the people don't freak out at the word God.
Yeah, absolutely. And I often say, you know, that something greater that you wish could hold you with tenderness and love, you know?
Absolutely. And it really is all about love. One of the things that I try to do when I'm engaged with a younger generation person is to acknowledge the ways in which my generation has failed all of the generations who come after us. So I simply say, I'm sorry for all the blundering that boomers have left to your generation and the world that we currently live in. Homelessness is one of the legacies that we've left behind us. What surprises me, however, and makes my heart sore is when I meet people like you who've not been driven to despair by what previous generations have left. In fact, I bow with great reverence and respect to you and your team at Reciprocity Foundation and the Hobb community.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And
now,
thank you for this opportunity to be able to share this with you.
Absolutely. And you're going to be here in Boulder in October for a conference on radical compassion at Naropa University. Others who will be there are Vandana Shiva, Joanna Macy, Bernie Glassman. But I just really want to thank you for coming on the show. Thank you, Larry, for calling in. And I just really appreciate Adam's work in the world and such bright lights in his generation. So I want to thank all of you for coming on the show tonight, for tuning in. And Adam, I wish you really well in all of your endeavors, and thank you for your work in the world.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, for this opportunity, and thank you for your wonderful and inspiring work.
Thank all of you for listening. We'll be back with you next week on Lifeboat Hour.
Old Black Joe's still picking cotton.